Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. Vladimir Putin visits China, American protectionism, Biden's tariffs on Chinese exports, and the U.S. makes an unusual request of China and Russia. First, Putin visits China. Xi Jinping's balancing act with Russia and the West took on a new challenge with Putin's arrival in Beijing. It was roughly the 40th such meeting of these supposedly old friends. Once again, Xi had to demonstrate loyalty to Russia in its war in Ukraine, while also showing sensitivity to European commercial interests and U.S. pressure on China to limit its military support of Putin's war. At least on the surface, Xi came through. He promised to expand all manner of China-Russia ties, fully support their, quote, comprehensive strategic partnership, increase strategic coordination, support Russia's special military operation, not war, in Ukraine, and condemn U.S. dual containment of China and Russia. Their joint statement gave no indication of differences on either global strategy or specific issues, though this time there was no mention, as there had been when Putin visited in February 2022, of no limits to the partnership. In any case, too much attention has been paid to no limits, and not enough to the upper hand Xi has with Putin. In a word, Russia needs China far more than the reverse. The Chinese determine how much and what kind of assistance to provide to Russia, whether as a customer or an exporter. So far, China has stepped up, though not to the extent of challenging U.S. and European sanctions. One specialist underscores Russian dependence on China by saying, quote, China has emerged as Russia's single most important partner, providing a lifeline not only for Mr. Putin's war machine, but also for the entire embattled economy. In 2023, Russia's trade with China hit a record $240 billion, up by more than 60% from pre-war levels, as China accounted for 30% of Russia's exports and nearly 40% of its imports. Before the war, Russia's trade with the European Union was double that with China. Now it's less than half. As for military aid to Russia, China is again the key provider. As the New York Times reports, quote, last year some 89% of the high-priority imports necessary for Russian weapons production came from China, according to a customs data analysis by Nathaniel Scheer, a researcher at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Those included everything from machine tools used to build military equipment to optical devices, electronic sensors, and telecommunications gear, the analysis found, unquote. U.S. and European Union efforts to get Beijing to cut back on dual-use items that support Russia's military industry have gone nowhere. Xi may also have the upper hand with the European Union, for despite German and especially French efforts to get Xi to agree to do more to persuade Putin to end his war, Xi has been able to use the EU's dependence on Chinese trade and investment to nod yes on peace and do nothing to promote it. China's line on the war has not changed since the start. Calls for a peace settlement, defense of the principle of respect for territorial integrity, a nod to Ukraine, support of a country's legitimate security interests, a nod to Russia, and willingness to take part in peace talks. These are evasions, not interventions, as China's leadership clearly believes the Ukraine war has more benefits than costs. Next, American protectionism, Biden's tariffs on Chinese exports. The Biden administration shares European concerns about China's flooding of the market in electric vehicles, solar panels, steel, and a host of other goods, which, thanks to state subsidies, are underpricing the same U.S.-produced items. The administration is planning to raise tariffs to protect home industries, quadrupling electric vehicle tariffs to 100%, tripling certain levies on steel and aluminum products to 25%, and doubling the rate on semiconductors to 50%. As the New York Times reports, quote, Chinese exports could soon pose a threat to some of the American companies that Mr. Biden has tried to bolster with federal grants and tax incentives, much of which comes from his 2022 climate law. Biden says the Chinese are not competing, they're cheating, overproducing at home and selling this overcapacity abroad, as Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen charged when she visited Beijing last month. Biden may claim his tariff increases are different from Trump's because they aim to protect specific high-tech industries. The Chinese fail to see the difference. They respond that they're the victims here. As a foreign ministry spokesman said, quote, the real purpose is to hold back China's high-quality development and deprive China of its legitimate right to development. There isn't a Chinese overcapacity, he said, but a U.S. overcapacity of anxiety stemming from lack of confidence and smears against China. Rumors are circulating that China may respond to high U.S. tariffs, not just by raising their own, as they did when Trump raised U.S. tariffs, but by devaluing China's currency. That would mean cheaper Chinese exports, which, given U.S. consumers' insatiable demand for Chinese goods, would have a major negative impact on the U.S. trade picture. Is another trade war looming with China? The United States makes an unusual request of China and Russia. The Biden administration has requested that China and Russia not allow artificial intelligence, AI, to take the place of humans when making decisions about nuclear weapons. Quote, "We certainly have made a very clear and strong commitment that in cases of nuclear employment, that decision would only be made by a human being. We would never defer a decision on nuclear employment to AI. We strongly stand by that statement, and we've made it publicly with our colleagues in the United Kingdom and France. We would welcome a similar statement by China and the Russian Federation." Paul Dean, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of Arms Control, Deterrence and Stability, made that request public in a briefing on May 2. "Let us hope that we and the other nuclear weapon states never again get to the point of deploying a nuclear weapon in an ongoing conflict, much less relying on AI to do so." But then, why is the U.S. Air Force planning to rely on AI in fighter jets? According to a report by Public Citizen, quote, "The U.S. Air Force is testing F-16 fighter jets controlled by artificial intelligence, even conducting training dogfights in American airspace between aircraft piloted by AI and those with human crews. The Air Force says it will deploy armed, automated, uncrewed fighter jets in as little as 6 years," unquote. So, it's okay to use AI on jets that are armed with air-to-surface missiles, and when AI on cars still don't function properly? In other news, Putin's surprise appointment as defense secretary. Vladimir Putin decided to force out one of his generals, Sergei Shoigu, as defense secretary and appoint Andrei Belousov, an advisor on the economy for the past 6 years. What to make of the appointment? Quote, "Putin's priority is war, and war of attrition is won by economics," said Alexandra Prokopenko, a former Russian central bank official now at the Carnegie Russia Eurasia Center in Berlin. Belousov, fittingly for a war of attrition, referred to improving conditions for Russia's soldiers in his first public statement. "Russia has paid dearly in lives for its aggression, and now it is clearly prepared to fight for years to come. The economics of warfare thus have high priority: veterans affairs, bureaucratic coordination, military procurement, and the budget." This appointment may also relate to Putin's so-called peace plans. According to a number of Russians close to Kremlin thinking, Putin's idea is to settle the war by keeping all the territory his forces currently occupy. He is said to want to avoid a forever war, but is prepared to go on fighting if he can't get what he wants. Ukraine, of course, is adamantly opposed to surrendering any territory. Thus, the war of attrition has no foreseeable end. German environmentalists attack a Tesla plant. Several hundred German environmental activists who oppose Tesla production battled with police in a factory outside Berlin. The activists had tried to storm the factory. Environmental groups have been engaged against Tesla since the factory opened in 2022. The town in which the factory is located voted against having the plant there, but the vote wasn't legally binding. Now, Tesla is seeking to expand the plant into a nearby forest. The local police only detained one protester, baffling Elon Musk, who said, quote, "Why do the police let the left-wing protesters off so easily?" An Israeli detention camp for Palestinians is uncovered. Three Israeli whistleblowers who worked inside a detention camp in the Negev desert have told of the appalling conditions for Palestinian prisoners. The camp might be called Israel's Guantanamo. One of them took photos that show, quote, "rows of men in gray tracksuits seen sitting on paper-thin mattresses ring-fenced by barbed wire. All appear blindfolded, their heads hanging heavy under the glare of floodlights. A putrid stench filled the air, and the room hummed with the men's murmurs. Forbidden from speaking to each other, the detainees mumbled to themselves," unquote. The camp, called Seder Taiman, is located in an Israeli military base about 18 miles inside the Gaza-Egypt border. According to the whistleblower accounts provided to CNN, quote, "the facility is split into two parts, enclosures where around 70 Palestinian detainees from Gaza are placed under extreme physical restraint, and a field hospital where wounded detainees are strapped to their beds wearing diapers and fed through straws, unquote. The Israeli Defense Forces response, quote, "The IDF ensures proper conduct toward the detainees in custody. Any allegation of misconduct by IDF soldiers is examined and dealt with accordingly. In appropriate cases, the Military Police Criminal Division investigations are opened when there is suspicion of misconduct justifying such action," unquote. Anger at Israel and the U.S. is spreading into Jordan. Most of the attention in the Gaza war these days is being paid to the Israeli attack on Rafah. But here's a less publicized response to the war. In an article for The New Yorker, Rania Abu Zaid, based in Amman, Jordan, writes about angry protesters who have been demonstrating for many days against their government. Though Jordanian leaders have sharply criticized Israel's assault on Gaza, it maintains diplomatic and trade relations with Israel, hosts U.S. troops, and receives more U.S. aid than any Middle Eastern country except Israel. The demonstrators would torch the Israeli embassy if not blocked by Jordanian security forces. Her article indicates that this seething anger reflects public opinion throughout the Middle East. Quote, "In January, the Doha Institute's Arab Center for Research and Policy Studies released the findings of what it called the first survey to gauge public opinion about the Gaza conflict across the Arab world. 92% of respondents said that the Palestinian cause was not solely the concern of Palestinians but of all Arabs, the highest proportion since polling began more than a decade ago. More than 75% considered the U.S. and Israel, quote, the biggest threat to the security and stability of the region, unquote. Two-thirds described the Hamas attack as a legitimate resistance operation. These views, to repeat, represent public opinion, not the opinion of Arab governments. As in Jordan, Arab publics are sharply critical of their governments for their often half-hearted support of the Palestinian cause. Finally, mass protests in Georgia, the country. Georgia, which lives under the shadow of Russia, faces a potential crisis. Tens of thousands of people protested in Tbilisi, the Georgian capital, against a draft law designed, just like one in Russia, to crack down on so-called foreign agents. The law is seen by critics and rights groups as a threat to democracy in the South Caucasus nation. The law, now passed by parliament, requires non-governmental groups and independent media outlets to register as agents of foreign influence. It would apply to organizations, activist groups, and media outlets that receive more than 20% of their funding from abroad. The clear target is U.S. and European non-governmental organizations that support democratic practices and human rights. The majority party in parliament, called Georgian Dream, supports the law, saying it will keep foreign interference out of Georgia's politics. But the real purpose may be the opposite, as the country's president, who is not a member of that party, says, namely, to promote Russia's interference in Georgia and frustrate Georgia's efforts to enter the European Union. The president has vetoed the bill, saying it is, quote, Russian in its essence, but Georgian Dream has overridden the veto. The larger issue here is the potential for Russian intervention if popular opposition to the draft law threatens the Georgian dream that has strong Russian support. We need only recall that Russia already occupies 20% of Georgia's territory, and that Russia has a history of interventions in its near abroad, in Belarus, Kazakhstan, and of course Ukraine. And in Georgia, there is substantial support for Ukraine, including by young Georgians who have gone there to fight the Russian invasion. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.